Today I'm announcing that New Zealand will ban all military-style semi-automatic weapons. We will also ban all assault rifles. We will ban all high-capacity magazines. We will ban all parts with the ability to convert semi-automatic or any other type of firearm into a military-style semi-automatic weapon.
I have only five words for you. From my cold, dead hand.
All right. Thank you. Had to play a little Charlton Heston for you this morning. I've only played that soundbite from the Prime Minister of New Zealand for one reason, so that on this beautiful Thursday morning, we can all sit back and say a silent prayer for the founders of this country who had the foresight to put the Second Amendment in place. Because if it wasn't for that, you've got a half a dozen or maybe a dozen people running for president of the United States who would do the exact same thing in a heartbeat if they were given a split chance. But they'll never have that chance because of the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution. So, you know, thank you, Mr. Adams. Thank you, Mr. Hamilton. Thank you to all the founders, Thomas Jefferson, of this fine country for giving us those protections for our Second Amendment rights. Good morning to you. How's it going?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good.
I have to give Tricia some props this morning. I walked in the door and I wondered as I was driving in, I wonder if Tricia saw that soundbite from that New Zealand Prime Minister. And she, of course, did and made sure that we had that for me when I got here.
I actually heard it on my way in,
so
and thank thought,
you.
Ooh, Mark's going to need this.
Mark's head is spinning off of his shoulders right now
Absolutely.
At some point.
I thought the same thing about the Constitution, though, too, when I heard it. And I usually don't get all patriotic like that, especially about guns. But I was like, wow, the ability to just do this. And at one point later on in the interview, she says something along the lines of, you can get a permit from police for these weapons, but don't bother trying.
And I don't thought, even bother
don't
applying.
Don't even bother applying. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, a couple of observations. Just number one, they're going to confiscate weapons,
wow.
right, from legal gun owners, people who bought them legally. And in other words, within about 3 weeks in New Zealand, you will be a criminal if you haven't turned over your weapons. Now, here's what they're concerned about. For the gun grabbers worldwide, they're thrilled about this news. Here's what they're concerned about. Unfortunately, New Zealand didn't have a gun registry. Only about 4% of guns in the country were registered. So the fear is they don't really know who's got what, and there'll be no way of knowing if they got them all. So now that's what they'll be living in fear of, that some legal gun owners out there might still have some of these extraordinarily dangerous weapons that apparently have the ability to not only unlock the safe that's holding them and go out and shoot people if you're not careful, but there's going to be a lot of them. So that's what they're worried about. It's crazy. So I've got a little bit of a modest proposal this morning for all of the lefties in this country who are applauding this morning, including presidential candidates like Bernie Sanders, who says this is exactly what the United States should do, and this is what he'll work for. I will support, and I'm never in favor of big government programs, but I'm going to make an exception. I would support using the United States taxpayer dollars to buy one-way tickets to New Zealand for every freaking liberal in America who thinks this is a good idea. If you want to live in a country where they can take your rights away like this with the snap of a finger, go. And I'll be glad to contribute some money on your behalf for your one-way ticket. But don't ever plan to come back.
Well, shouldn't that be free? Isn't
Stay
everything
over there.
Free? Can't we just send them there for free?
Yeah. Hey, by the way, let me see here. Let me do the backwards math. We have about 6 hours till your NCAA brackets have to be in, right? A little less than 6 hours.
Yeah.
So
first
by 11 a.m.
11:15.
Yeah, by a little after 11 this morning, if you're in a pool, you have to have your money turned. I turned in my picks yesterday, but I got to turn in my cash
Same
today.
With me.
Yeah.
Same with me.
That's right.
I'm still debating.
I'm guessing Kentucky's going to win on your bracket.
Of course, on one of them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But do you have a real one?
No, not a real one. I always submit a couple because here's the thing about it. Every year in the NCAA tournament, there are upsets that nobody expects. There's no way you can always pick an 8 seed over a 9 seed or a 7 seed over a 12 seed or something. There are always upsets. So I always try to go through and make a separate bracket with upsets nobody's going to expect because you never know, right?
Yeah, I do that too.
It's a matter, you can't just go in and pick completely by your heart. But today we were supposed to wear our shirts for our favorite NCAA team. Did you do that?
Darn it.
I don't have one. I don't have a favorite team, so
well,
I don't have.
I did not wear a Kentucky shirt today, but I did wear my favorite shirt.
Which I'm
taking my coat
today.
Off right now, which says, I hate Louisville. I'm a Kentucky basketball fan, and I hate Loserville. That's what it says right
I
here.
Like so that. That's funny.
So thank you. So I'm prepared.
All right. So you're rooting for Minnesota today.
Even though there's a Patino at the helm, yes, I am. Yeah, his son, Richard Patino, is the coach at Minnesota.
All right.
The former Louisville coach. Mm-hmm. All right. Not sports talk radio, so we won't be talking about this all day, I promise. 314-241-9797, and we'll get to your national anthem, and we're back in just a minute.
But I believe diversity is an old, old wooden ship that was used during the Civil War era.
No, I was not online looking at my brackets just then, I promise. Maybe I was. I need to check and make sure I've got everything perfect before the deadline today. So,
it's a lot
of
work.
I do have Loserville losing to Minnesota, by the way, just so you know that.
Of course.
He's willing it so.
I'm willing it so. I don't hold any, I hold no ill will toward Rick Pitino. I was kind of felt bad for the guy, right? Hall of Fame coach, ran into some bad trouble in Louisville, and now he's gone. They fired him, and he's bitter about it. Because there's still this investigation into whether or not these shoe companies were acting as conduits to make payments to recruits to get them to these schools is still ongoing. There are trials going on. There was a coach yesterday or the day before who pleaded guilty to some impropriety. I believe Chuck Person was his name, former NBA player. Anyway, the Louisville Courier-Journal reached out to Rick Pitino for comment on this since some of the testimony still centered around him and a certain recruit, and he fired off some angry response to them that said, just leave me alone or let me rest in peace. Louisville ruined a Hall of Fame career. You people are awful. I don't know, something like this. He's bitter. But now his son coaches at Minnesota and they're playing Louisville. You know the selection committee did that one on purpose. You know they did. Hey, speaking of weird.
That list is long.
Speaking of weird, CNN. Let's talk about CNN for a minute. So CNN, you know, they held that that town hall in the round after the Parkland high school shooting. And that's that awkward one where they let Dana Loesch go on there. And the audience was booing at her, and she's on there with that lying sheriff of Broward County who is now in trouble for mishandling that whole situation to begin with, right? Mm-hmm. They won a Walter Cronkite Award the other day for that town hall after the Parkland shooting. It's just unbelievable to me the bias and it's just a sickness in the media these days that they got some kind of an award for that. You know, it doesn't take, it takes almost a sick sense of humor to stick a bunch of grieving community in a environment like that and then try to wring more emotion out of them and then
win something,
win an award for mm-hmm. it. I mean, that's just not right, in my opinion. But last night, this was even more weird. CNN has taken it upon itself to give each one of these 32 Democrats running for president their own town hall or their own, you come in and take questions from the audience and we'll try to endear you to them. Like that's what they seem intent on doing, each one of them. So last night they got this this crazed dude from Colorado, Hickenlooper, who doesn't have an mm-hmm. ice cube's chance in hell of ever being president of the
Is
United States.
Is he running?
Yeah, he's running.
Oh,
yeah,
boy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't. I genuinely cannot keep them straight.
So Hickenlooper, boy.
We're having trouble with these names, too.
Mm-hmm. This guy.
They're very silly.
I'll get to that, because he can't wait for Donald Trump to give him a nickname, because he's heard them all. Pooper Scooper, Chicken Looper, Hookin Looper. He can't wait for Donald Trump to give him, because bullies do. That's what bullies do.
I hope Trump doesn't.
He was bullied his entire life. And my thought is, you're never going to be enough of a threat that Donald Trump needs to give you a nickname, right?
Right.
Right.
Listen to this awkward story he told on national television. Apparently he wrote a book at some point. And he admitted when he was in college that he invited his mother to go with him to an X-rated movie. This was awk.
It was a pretty famous movie, too.
So I took my mother to see Deep Throat. And to her credit, the first scene is... I didn't ask the question. But I will tell you that my mother was, I'm sure she was mortified. And I said repeatedly, I think we should leave. I think we should go. And my mother was the kind of person that rarely went to a movie. She thought almost every movie would get on TV. Obviously not this one. But she really, once she paid, she was going to stay. And at the end, she knew that I was humiliated. And as we drove home, and you know how the dashboard in the old cars had that kind of green light? And I, you know, I asked her, I said, well, that was some experience. And she says, well, I thought the lighting was very good.
Was that awkward? Or was it just me?
No, that was awkward.
So first of all, he claims that he already had plans to go to the movie. He came home from college. His mother had made this big dinner for them because his father passed away. He was the youngest child. He was the last one left at home. He came home from college. She'd planned to spend the evening with him. He'd already made plans to go to this movie with a friend of his. So instead of telling his friend no, I don't know if he had a porn addiction or what, he instead invited his mother to go with him, even though he thought she would say no, but she said yes. Okay, at any point you can stop this train, right?
Yes.
No, Mom, I was just kidding. I'm not going to
a.
I'm not going to an X-rated movie with you. But he took her anyway and sat next to her and then watched the entire movie, however long it was. I don't even know. I've never seen it. I'm just saying he watched the entire porn movie with his mother and then had an awkward, imagine that, awkward ride back home after sitting through something like this with your parent at age 18. This guy is sick. He's warped. I mean, that's what, he put it in a book, which is why the CNN anchor, Dana Bash, brought it up to him, and he seemed a little embarrassed to have to recount it again. But
well, he's the one that put it in the book.
Voting for this idiot?
I mean, no one, you didn't have to tell anybody. Was he worried his mom was going to tell everybody if he ran for office one day, so he was going to get ahead of it and put it in a book? I really have a feeling that didn't need to ever come out.
Thank you. Some things that ought to just be buried in the family history.
I completely agree.
I feel confident his mother never told anyone. I'm just saying.
I mean, would you admit that?
Ugh, what's wrong with people? 314-241-9797. We'll be back in just a minute. I'm going to let you hear my interview with State Representative Holly Rader, who's trying to ensure due process on college campuses. We'll be right back. Due process is something we talk about a lot. You assume everybody gets due process in our legal system, but we found out that's not always the case these days on college campuses. Missouri State Representative Holly Rader is with us right now from District 148. It's down around Cape, and she's part of the Missouri Campus Due Process Coalition. And good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Tell us what this movement is all about. Why is this necessary?
So, you know, and as a mother of a student my son is a senior at Missouri State, I had no idea that me paying for him to be in a institution of higher education removed his due process. And so when I found that out in December, you know, we've got the federal movement going on, but that we were going to try to get this done through the state, I was 100% on board. I mean, I had no idea that our students became second-class citizens just being students.
Now, wasn't part of this a reinterpretation of the rules under the Obama administration that led to this problem?
Yes, it is. When they come, when the Obama administration passed down the new interpretation of the rules is when we really saw the liberal colleges really swinging hard the other way and taking away cross-examination. I mean, it's really unbelievable.
So it really predates the hashtag MeToo movement or whatever, but if somebody claims they were assaulted, the person who's the accused really didn't get their day in court under these sets of rules.
Not at all. And, you know, and not even as a mother, I couldn't even have an attorney cross-examine, represent my son. And, you know, I grew up in sexual abuse. I understand it. I want someone to be prosecuted. I took someone who harmed my daughter to court when she was 11 or 12 years old. I mean, I've been through it. I understand it. And am so proud of the Me Too movement and what it has done to change the conversation in society. But you cannot let this go so far the other way that just because someone's accused, they're guilty.
You know, the people that are opposed to this, and there are a number of them out there, are screaming bloody murder that you're somehow stripping or making people who have been victims less likely to come forward for some reason because we're discussing due process. What's your answer to that?
You know, our judicial system is not perfect, but it is the best one on the planet. And that is where sexual assault and sexual abuse needs to be to have their day in court. That is where they need to be prosecuted and put away. We should never say, okay, we're going to give this person more protections by taking away this other person's protections. And if you allow a lady, which that's, you know, we'll just use the most common situation. If you allow a female student to make an accusation and she and we've given her more protections so that she can come forward more, so that she'll feel more comfortable coming forward, yet we remove the protections of that male that's being accused, what in the world? That is not America. I mean, anyone that would agree to that is not thinking it through. I mean, that's ridiculous. But sexual abuse, sexual assault, the Me Too movement has caused women to come forward. The Me Too movement has given women the strength and the courage to change that conversation and to say, no, this, I'm not going to be accepting of this. That's what's changing it.
And you wrote an editorial to the Post saying that you were a victim.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
You understand.
I grew up in it. My mother, my sister, and then, you know, as an adult, my daughter. I absolutely understand. I've been on all sides of it, and we've reported and not had justice at times. And so, with my mother and with my sister, and so I absolutely get this and how difficult it is. But it's so important that as an American citizen that we always hold to due process.
State Representative Holly Rader is our guest here. I see, I guess there's a two-pronged approach to this, right? It seems like if the Obama administration changed it, the Trump administration could just fix it. Why don't they do that?
So hopefully they will. However, because of what we saw with the Obama administration, Missouri does not need to be beholden to the back and forth. We need to set this in Missouri statute. We don't need to wait until the feds get this right. We need to set this in Missouri statute. And, you know, yes, the federal statute is going to always prevail over Missouri when it comes to this, but we need to define this in Missouri statute. And then if it's just an interpretation of the rules, we have ours set forth.
Where does that stand now? Have you got it? Are you looking at a vote? Because obviously shepherding something through the legislature is not an easy process.
It's not an easy process. I'm chair of rules. And good. So we got that out of my rules committee before we left for spring break this week. And so it's going to be available to come to the floor. Hopefully we'll get that moved on the calendar and to the floor and get to have debate in the Senate. It has come out of committee. And so I'm hoping that we will see the same movement on the Senate side.
Who are your Senates? Do you have a Senate sponsor?
The Senate sponsor, I believe, I'm not certain.
That's
who
okay.
Senate sponsor
yeah, I just
is.
Wondered. Yeah.
Representative Dorman is the sponsor in the House.
Good. Yeah. Well, good. Well, where can people go to find out more information on this? Because a lot of us, me included, have children on a college campus somewhere in Missouri. So this is directly impacts our lives potentially.
Right. So we have, you can go to the Missouri website, the Missouri. Yeah.
It's a, let's see, MoCampusDueProcessCoalition.org is what I have here.
Right. And, that's set up, that has information. And then you can also go to the Missouri House of Representatives website and look up Dean Dorman's bill and find out where that's moving in the process.
Well, thank you for putting up the bill and putting up the fight for it, because I think it's something we need to get taken care of.
And I think it's important to have someone who can speak to both sides of it, you know, as a victim, as a mother of a victim, but then also as the mother of a son that's in college, I can speak to both sides of this. And so I'm happy to be helpful and to help have these conversations across the state.
Representative Holly Rader, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, we appreciate that. We'll have that link on our website, by the way, 971talk.com/Cox, if you're interested in going on there and getting to their website and reading more about what it's all about and where it stands, and then, of course, reaching out to your state legislator to let them know how you feel.
That the establishment press is out to get him doesn't mean that great journalism is not being done. It is. But the notion that most of us look upon Donald Trump as being an absolute fiasco, he's not mistaken in that perception, and he's not mistaken when so many of the liberal media, for example, describe themselves as belonging to the resistance.
How about that? Ted Koppel. Kind of having it out with Brian Stelter there on this at this event where he was, and they don't, you know, Ted Koppel is no he's no conservative. I think it was an interesting observation on his part to make that observation that it's pretty obvious the New York Times and the Washington Post, as we all know, I mean, this is not breaking news in conservative circles. This is shocking. This is groundbreaking that a giant of journalism like Ted Koppel from ABC News would come out and point out the bias. And I listened to the big chunk of the interview, and you know, effectively what he was saying was that the wall has been torn down between the editorial section of the New York Times and the Washington Post and the news section, and that there used to be a very clear wall there. And the editorial section was never something you'd expect to see on the front page. Mm-hmm. It was in the editorial section, which, remember the old-fashioned Post-Dispatch? Remember that one from years ago when it was thick enough that there was a separate section for local news, and then you'd open it up, and like on next to the back page of that section, you'd come to the editorial page. And the St. Louis the St. Louis Post-Dispatch editorial board would have its commentary in there, and then on the opposite page, they'd run Thomas Sowell or whoever the liberal was they were running at the time. They'd run their commentary. Then they'd have the letters to the editor and all that. It was in a whole separate section. Now the paper's so thin that it tends to be somewhere in the front just by the nature of it, the front section of the paper. But his point was there used to be a very clear line there. And his allegation is what they've done is they've allowed that editorial stuff to creep onto the front page. And he's concerned about that. Well, that's not what the establishment media wants to hear. They don't want to hear that. They don't want him to point that out. But you know, listen to his other conversation with his wife that he had. And I'm going to ask Chris Wallace about this. We're going to get Chris on later this morning in the 8 o'clock hour at around 8:37. I just want to get his reaction to it. I mean, I think I suspect his reaction will be similar to mine, but I could be wrong. Well, I'm just going to see what he thinks about somebody with Koppel's resume saying something like this. And if I don't expect it'll have any impact on what they do at the New York Times or the Washington Post, but it's certainly a shock to their system that he would say this about them. Go to cut 25 talking about his conversation with his wife.
I remember sitting at the breakfast table with my wife during the campaign after the Access Hollywood tape came out. And the New York Times, and I will not offend any of you here by using the language, but you know exactly what words we used. And they were spelled out on the front page of the New York Times. I turned to my wife and I said, the Times is absolutely committed to making sure that this guy does not get elected.
This is Nightline. Remember that famous voice from Ted Koppel? This is Nightline. Yeah. The I turned to my wife and I said, the New York Times is absolutely committed to making sure this guy doesn't get elected. Little did Ted know that a similar conversation had taken place at the top floor of the FBI maybe that same day. Because they were also committed to making sure this guy didn't get elected. And who else was committed to making sure this guy didn't get elected? John McCain. And boy, has that ignited a firestorm. Oh, for the third day in a row, the president has taken in vain the name of St. John McCain. You know, I spelled it out yesterday in my soapbox, but if I have to mention it again, I will never, ever lose my respect for what John McCain did as a military member serving our country. Mm-hmm. And there were people that served with him who don't feel that way. But I'm just saying, he was a patriot. He went through torture and stuff that I can't imagine, and I will always respect him for that. John McCain got out of the service, he came home, and he elected to become a politician. And he became a political animal, and he made decisions as a politician that he wouldn't have been shy about this. He made decisions that benefited his cause at the time, whatever that happened to be, whatever he believed in. And he is not immune from criticism for those decisions. The only reason John McCain has been revived in the past 3 days is because we had a legal document come out that was released that was a transcript nobody had seen before, with one of McCain's top aides who got deposed, centering around how McCain's office got a hold of the Steele dossier. And it went a whole lot further than what John McCain admitted to in his book. He actually sent a top representative of his office to Europe to meet directly with Christopher Steele, the author of the document. And Christopher Steele testified that the reason he wanted to give it to McCain is that he felt it wouldn't look as nakedly political if it got released through a Republican anti-Trumper's office as opposed to Hillary Clinton's campaign. That's why we're angry. John McCain was a willing participant in an effort by the DNC and Perkins Coie and Hillary Clinton to get false information released about Donald Trump to try to prevent him from being elected president of the United States. That was a political decision John McCain made. As a result of that, he opened himself up to any criticism that we want to level at him. It had nothing to do with his service to this country. I'm angry at what he did. I can express that just like the president can. And all these people are butthurt about it. Get over it. 314-241-9797. We'll talk to Speaker Tim Jones about this and other items coming up about 6:37. And Congresswoman Ann Wagner joins us at 7:10. We'll be right back.